It's time to pony up to the table and hear all of what's going on in the county, where it all comes together. The County Grapevine, a 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county.
Welcome to the Grapevine for Thursday, July 9th. My name is Gage Broderick, and joining me, of course, is my co-host, Brenda Little. Hi, Brenda.
Hi, Gage. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine.
Yeah.
You're telling me a little bit about your new addition to the family, your new kitten, right?
Yes. She's doing fantastic. You know, Anne out at the Humane Society picks them for you, or you can pick them. But, yeah, she gave us a nice little dolly.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
What's her name?
Lucy.
Lucy. Oh, I love it.
And my
I
husband. Okay, so my husband does the whole joke all the time. So why do you think we called her Lucy? And the person will go, oh, I don't know, because she doesn't look like Ethel. And they laugh all the time. And I've heard this joke, I can't tell you how many times, but lots.
It always lands, though,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, today on the show, later on, we've got on what's happening at the library. Liz Zylstra is going to be highlighting the work of author Jeannie Keough, where she reads from her debut collection, Press 9 for Pig Latin, on County Grove. Cheryl McCullen speaks with frequent collaborator Lise Bois. Lise discusses how both to create a garden in the springtime and how to maintain it and help it flourish during the summer season. But first, the county profile. Here is Renee Weissman-Standers.
Welcome to The Grapevine. I'm Renee Weissman-Standers for 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county. I have met a philosopher creative, a man of principle and artistic musical skills, a wordsmith, and his name is John Kitchen. And he is my next county profile. Welcome, John Kitchen.
Oh, thank you so much.
I had a short bio sent to me from John, which, by the way, I understand your wife, Penny, typed it all for you because you will not have email or a cell phone. Is that true?
Yes, that's
true. Why is that?
I don't want anyone to know where I am. And I had enough technology working for Canada Revenue for 30 years.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
So I know there's reasons for the way that you are now, which is a little quirky, right? Would you say you're a little quirky?
I've been described as that actually rather recently by a fellow employee.
And that's why you're here as an interview.
That's why I'm living in Prince Edward County.
Okay. Can you explain that to us?
As you know, Renee, Penny, my wife Penny, 40-odd years. She was born and raised here. I used to come down visiting in-laws and so on at Christmas time, and I would think, compared to downtown Toronto, this is like Andy of Mayberry. If I could just get a job down here. And Toronto was very kind to me. So we came down with no job, no prospects, no nothing. We lived temporarily in a family cottage, rent-free, which would certainly help. After about 2 years of just looking around for any kind of employee, and I was panicky, I got a job at Canada Revenue unloading trucks in Belleville.
Belleville.
Okay. Yeah.
You were living here, but driving to Belleville, was it 5 days a week?
That for about 5 or 6 years. And then I got a job there in Canada Revenue and procurement. Then eventually went into tax collection. I was a tax collector. Nobody was more surprised than I was, but the job opportunity was there. And
what did you do as a tax collector for revenue?
I would take incoming calls from all over the country from people who had difficulties, and then I would deal with them and hopefully be of service to them.
Were you?
I would like to think so. Yeah, they always wanted to call me back. It was a case of just treating them well, and they treated me well, and yeah, listening to the information, obviously, but also the tenor of the voice and try to capture a mental image of who the person was calling, because nobody wants to call Canada Revenue to say, how are you? It was more than successful, I was told, there. It was, frankly, it was enjoyable.
So you left that with a certain sense of accomplishment?
I did. The only regret I had was relating to the ladies I worked around. I really cared about them. They threw a couple of little shindigs for me, and I told them, I've got the rest of my life to miss all of you and each of you.
Now, you said the ladies. Were there no men on the team?
Oh, a couple. They were superfluous. Mm-hmm. I retired after a little over 30 years.
I would like to go, at this point, right to the beginning, 1943, born in downtown Toronto.
Well, I was born, downtown Toronto, Women's College Hospital, right downtown. But my parents moved to Burnhamthorpe Road, which at that time was rural. And they had a horse or two and animals, and it just seemed that the city would encroach on their land and lifestyle. So they went from there to ultimately they ended up in my time, they ended up in Markham. And there was, and that at that time it was farmland.
And, you know, I ask everybody this, John, your family's heritage.
English Scottish. My grandfather, he was a person of some note in that he was involved in vaudeville, show business, you know, Bill Redpath. And apparently he didn't sing very well. He played the xylophone. He was worse on that. He had wit about him. And then he discovered motion pictures. Got himself a projector. This would be around 1910 or something. And then from there on, he booked himself out as Professor Redpath. He was pretty full of crap, but he was charmingly so. It's odd, but yeah, I went in the same way. I was a terrible scholar. I had no interest in school, no interest in much of anything, except maybe music and just getting by.
I was totally without any passion toward both scholarly pursuits and general society. You see why I say you're a wordsmith? You explain what I just read.
Well, as I say, I didn't do well at school, but I didn't particularly care to do well at school. I had an older sister who passed away recently, and she was a wonderful scholar. Father had very little formal education either, but he was a brilliant man, worked in combustion and things that blow up, and the Avro Arrow to some degree. He told me that he only had grade 11 education. He didn't. He had grade 9 or 10 or something. My mother was an artist. Sculpting.
Clay?
Yes, clay. And then the two of them would fire. He built my mother a kiln, and they had little figures of animals, which kind of backfired because they were very popular. So that turned into a full-time job, but he didn't want that. But they did that successfully and together. I had artistic tendencies, but they weren't recognized by either of my parents. That my father just, I don't know, he wanted me to go in his footsteps in science. At the age of 15, 16, I was introduced by a horse lady friend of my mother's to guitar. So, hey, I locked on to that. You know, so I did that after a fashion.
Well, how did you do that? How did you learn to play guitar?
That same lady just wrote out some diagrams of chords and just said, you know, put your fingers here and away you go. But I had that. Not that I was wonderfully adept at it. I wasn't. But at least I had something for self-identity. And also I found that I had absolutely no fear of speaking publicly. So I was winning elocution contests at school without even trying or caring, really. And I think I'm slightly dyslexic, but nobody recognized that at the time. I failed a couple times in high school, then flunked out, quite frankly.
How old were you?
That time I was 16, 17. I was invited to leave home. No screaming matches or anything like that. My father just gave me a $20 bill or something, and he said, goodbye.
And how did you feel?
I just thought, oh, okay, you know, that's fine. I guess I'm going. So I was pretty philosophical about it. I remember there was no rage, no screaming matches, no nothing. Just that was it. You know,
what did you do?
Survived.
What does that mean?
Staying at the Harbor Light and the Salvation Army. And I think it was for 25 cents. You get a bed on the streets, as it were, for a couple of, well, about a year and a bit. First job I got was a busboy in a restaurant, and the guy took one look at me, the owner, a man called Silverman, and he said, take the rest of the day off, here's a week's wages, get out of there.
Where did you go?
I went to a rooming house across from a place called the Terrace. It was a roller rink. $6 a week, I could get myself a room with a lock on the door. And then I was started to find my way through and then get a job.
What do you think he saw in you?
Perhaps promise. Or just something a little deeper. Yeah, that was a real leg up. He also told me at the time that if you're running into problems, you can always come back and work here. And I thanked him. But I saved enough money just to get myself a steak.
He was a restaurant owner?
It was called the Jewel Restaurant. So I was there for a while, and that was just enough to get myself a leg up. I got myself the normal job as a freight elevator operator in a place that sold medical supplies and drugs. I got some pickup jobs. My universe was downtown, always lived south of Bloor Street. And then the 60s happened, and then I got, that would be 62, 63, got myself a guitar out of a pawn shop and started to network, and then I would play in little bands and so on. But that at least got me out socially.
But where would your little bands play?
We got a job playing a place called Inn on the Parking Lot on Cumberland, one street below Yorkville. The Yorkville guy, what was his name, Colin Kerr, of a place called the Minor Bird Coffee House, he approached me and he said, you guys are making a little noise here, but you're not playing folk music, you're playing rock and roll. Do you want to come over to the Minor Bird? The only thing is we'd have to wear wigs and so on.
You had to wear wigs?
Yeah, because a couple of us had day jobs, so we couldn't.
Short hair.
We had short hair.
Ah,
dog.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we'd have to, we'd throw them in the trunk
this
of the car.
This was the 60s, right?
Yeah. This would be around 65, 66.
Yeah. So the Beatles with their long hair look was very shocking.
Yeah. I would have gone to see them or the Stones, one of them. They came to Maple Leaf Gardens, but we couldn't. I was booked.
So what was the name of your band?
It was a Minor Birds, and then it was a Minor Birds, as in minor or a major key. Again, the Minor Bird Coffee House, we were there only about a year. And then we decided, hey, this is okay, but we don't want to miss the boat on being adults. So we packed it all up. I sold all my gear, belonged to an actor's workshop for a while just for the fun of it. Then I found I could do that, and then I got involved in martial arts. Just went up the right dingy set of steps.
So what are the steps that you had to go through to get involved with martial arts? Because you were very much involved with that.
Well, initially, I just went up. The martial arts club was at the corner of Jarvis and Queen Streets, and I met a man called Hatashida, Frank Hatashida, who was a legend in his own time. I found I could do that. I could do martial arts. I didn't have to compete with anyone. I just had to work hard and get better on my own. And I did that for, a good 10 years. As a student, and then I became an instructor. There was a split. There was always politics, and I was left with him.
So where did you meet Penny?
Oh, I met Penny through a guitar, which was kind of romantic. I was walking through Allen's Gardens, and there was a fellow playing guitar on a park bench. And I said, that's my guitar. And he was the superintendent of a building. I went over to the building to do some working out stuff with him just for the fun of it on an afternoon. And Penny walked by.
That was your guitar. So was that a guitar you pawned or you sold?
Yes. But it was through that I met Penny. And then Penny was just for, walking by. She started singing a 40s tune or something. And I said, you've got a half-decent voice. I wasn't going to get involved with her because of the way I looked and the way she looked. There's 16 years difference in her age. We hung around together, and we went to a couple of open stages and open mics and jams and so on. I remember the first one, she was so nervous, she left her microphone in the refrigerator.
The microphone in the refrigerator?
She's an artist. Her nerves were shot.
Oh, so she put the microphone in the refrigerator for what reason?
Who knows?
Okay.
Maybe to sound cool. We got to know each other, got to like each other. The women in my life started to drift away. The men in hers started to drift away. We just, behaved badly, and then we got buried.
And you were both practicing martial arts.
Yeah, I had been at it for a while. She just was looking for something to keep in shape, because she was a film animation artist, which meant she was sitting at a desk, a light table, so many hours a day. And then around 1987, we decided, Toronto's nice, it's exciting, it's vibrant, but if we were ever to really settle down and ever have a child, not necessarily downtown. So we moved to Prince Edward County. I had a part-time job for a while at County Magazine, and then eventually I got a job, as I said, at Canada Revenue. Penny and I were married for well over 15 years, and we didn't think we were going to have children, and not after 15 years. And then Rowena came out of nowhere.
Yes, and I have to tell people how you wrote about Rowena. The lightning bolt charge that consumed the two of us at the night she was born and hasn't changed.
No, she's got Penny's looks, but fortunately she's got my mentality, which is a good combination for survival living downtown. We're okay. We're very proud parents. I remember saying to her once, thank you so much for the pride you give me as a father.
What do you feel was the most important lesson you've given to Rowena, your daughter?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Self-value. With my mother being involved so much with her horses and artwork, and my father so much involved with his sciences, I did not get that, and my sister did not get that. I told Penny, whether we have a boy or a girl, he or she are never going to doubt their value.
And the role of music in the world of the kitchens.
It started with Rowena coming up the stairs of her little cottage and doing a song and then throwing her arms out like show business and running back downstairs again. Penny wasn't home. I said, come here. I hauled her back up. I said, that's the most important thing and the most significant thing I've ever seen you do since I've met you. And then
How old is she?
Oh, I don't know, about 6 or 7.
Do you remember what the song?
No, I just remember she went ta-da and then back downstairs again. Penny and I agreed to put her through music lessons on the condition, A, she learned good music and also learned how to read music.
Okay, so when you say music lessons, what do you mean?
Vocal.
So but when did she become focused on opera?
She wanted to study music further, and we decided, okay, University of Toronto. With my guitar, I did a little thing that coup de passe is an opera item or classical voice, and another one was jazz, and she got accepted for both programs. And I said, listen, I think that if you do classical voice, you can sing anything. If you do jazz, you'll be able to do jazz.
So, John, the music that you and Penny and Rowena perform was not only in your household. Where else have you performed?
A number of local fundraisers. When I say a number, over the years, many, many fundraisers. But Rowena's been out there. So they're doing different tunes, different genres, which is great. Penny and I also, we were playing just bar bands around, you know, just noise until 1 o'clock
in
the morning.
Did you have your own band, you and Penny?
Penny Lee Band, and we played, as I say, locally. Well, we had a couple of Toronto things too, but it was just mainly local stuff just to raise mortgage.
Tell us about your music theater.
That was so flattering. There was a fellow, he's called Greg Garrett, wonderfully talented. He heard me doing, I don't know, something at a benefit, and he said, would you like to be part of the pit band, the Regent Theater? Anyway, I found to my horror that the first rehearsal, everybody read music except me. I got near like radar, and I said, Greg, it's you know, I know what I am as a guitar player. It's okay if you want to get someone that can read music and do a job. And all he said was, John, my patience is immense. So I worked hard. I had to learn how to play Gershwin jazz, Cole Porter jazz, and I told him several times since. I said, that was what a growth experience for me as an instrumentalist. And then eventually Penny got involved and she was singing, and even Rowena got involved and she was singing. So it was a family affair with the County Theater Group through the Regent Theater.
There is another expression that he wrote here, which I wanted to share with the audience. That expression, I took employ with Revenue Canada. You write songs.
Couple.
You write the music, and you write the lyrics.
Yeah.
And where do they come from?
Who knows? They're from a female perspective. There's one called Ain't Going Home With You. It's a girl sitting in a bar in an afternoon. And as she, the lyrics, oh, she's, you know, it's not a great day, you know, I'm scared of the week so far. And here you slide up, you know, I think you should just go back to the bar. I don't know why, but from male perspective, the couple that I've done, it doesn't come in as from a female. Yeah, odd. Only about three or four that I've had the patience to do anything. The one I'm citing, Ain't Going Home With You, won a minor contest. I wrote that, if I can call it that. In the food court at the Quinte Mall, you know, just jotting it down. That stuff comes easy to me. It's just very easy.
You said three or four, so that's one of them. Tell us another.
Yeah, another one called City Lights, another one called Every Time You Call. I also wrote a thing that got published in the county magazine called The Tale of the Two Rocks. It's about adversity and ability to handle it and turn it to one's advantage. That's martial arts. To an opponent or giving way to circumstances so they can be turned to your advantage by their own momentum and kinetic energy.
And do you feel that's a strategy you've made use of in your life?
Time and time again.
So to somebody listening in the audience, can you explain this to them, to give them a leg up?
Toughness is not how tough you are or what you inflict. Tough is how much you can tolerate. And when you're the last man standing, or girl standing, that's triumph.
What if you don't feel very tough? What if you feel like you can't tolerate it?
That's great. That's okay. That means your main weapon will be humility. Well, when I moved to Prince Edward County, not Penny so much, but with my coming here so many years ago, I was a little bit suspect by many people. Mm-hmm. Because where? I was from Toronto. Men would figure I was after their jobs or after their wives. I wasn't after their wives. I might have been after their jobs. So there was a degree of prejudice against me. It was subtle, you know, but I got used to it.
Did you feel it?
Well, I was involved in residential property management in downtown Toronto. I was VP of a small company. Like, I knew stuff, and, you know, landlord and tenant. And I didn't get so much as a callback in some companies around here and in Belleville. So I accepted it. But it was real. Well, Penny was at a grocery store one day, and then she casually remarked that she was born here. And then the lady behind the cash register said, "What? You're born here? Why didn't you tell me that?" And the demeanor changed. Immediately changed. Yeah, accepting the challenges, overcoming them, but not bragging about it.
So tell us about life in Prince Edward County for the Kitchen family now.
Enjoying everything about it that still remains. The building that's going on here, everything else, it's just changing. It's nothing I'd think anyone should be afraid of or even bemoan. Embrace it even, so much the better. I don't know anybody from my youth because I'm not even living in downtown Toronto anymore. I've lost track of everyone. I live here. But the people that I've met here, they wrote the book on solid.
So you have made friends here.
And yeah.
Do you feel sort of more accepted by the county?
Very much. A good part of that was certainly in latter days, Rowena and music and all that. But initially, it was martial arts. We taught at the rec, what they call the rec center, when it had sawdust on the floor.
So you were giving lessons in martial arts out here at the rec center.
And then we went to a couple of different clubs around and just rented space from them and continued to teach. Didn't have time to really devote the time that we felt we should to martial arts. So we ultimately had to give it up. And then we pursued with the music. I'm more in love with the place now than when we moved into the joint.
And I would like to thank you for being a county profile, John Kitchen, and your wonderful attitude about a very interesting life with the people of Prince Edward County and our listeners.
Thank you so much. I'm flattered.
I'm Renee Wiseman Stanners for 99.3 County FM.
Thanks to Renee and John for that interview. Stay tuned on the Grapevine after a quick break. We'll be right back with Cheryl McClellan and Lise Bois on the County Grows.